Okay. We are going to go live. Okay, it is 6 o'clock p.m. on Tuesday, October 10th, 2023. We'll call the Common Council meeting to order. Let's stand and say the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Weigel.
Here.
Varga.
Here.
Middleton.
Here.
Crowder.
Here.
Romano.
Here.
In front of you are the minutes from our last meeting on September 26th. I did note a couple of changes. Under the public hearing, it should say on line 6 and 7, it should say two new positions next year to the city. And then under the public hearing, the last paragraph, it should say that I recessed the council meeting, opened the public hearing, no comments or questions, so the public hearing was closed and the council meeting was resumed. Besides that, any other changes or corrections?
I do not.
Okay, I'll take a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, I have a motion by Jennifer to accept with noted changes. Correct, Jennifer?
Just correct.
Yes. Seconded by Tad. Further discussion? All those in favor, show by the usual sign.
Abstain.
Thank you. Walt, Dan, Jennifer, and Tad approve, and Jenny abstains. We're going to rearrange schedule a little bit to allow Gary Bird to give presentation about the cemetery restoration. What up, Gary? Gary and team, I should say. Team Blue.
You feel funny. Well, thank you for having us come back again to kind of give you an update for 2023. And so I appreciate that. First of all, I'd like to introduce the core team. Without these, less Mike Hawkins. Mike's mother had surgery today, so he's not available. But we have Denise Pignew, Chuck Beery. I always have to think about that. And then Bill Helm. And so these three, four, and myself, are pretty much the board or the core of what we do. So I could always depend on them to come and help us put up monuments and clean and so forth. We did have a lot of other groups that did visit over the summer to help us out, some youth. As always, we'd like to have more volunteers. This day and age, it just seems like it's just not something that everybody wants to do. And but for me, it's great. And by the way, my dog Teddy was disappointed that he could not be here as part of the team because Teddy's with me when I'm out at the cemeteries by myself. So he makes Joanne feel good. So today I just want to give you a brief update about what we did for Green Hill. As you know, we also worked in several other cemeteries. There was actually six cemeteries total that we worked in, and we're not done yet. So, and plus I've been, it seems the word has gotten out, and trustees and other folks are saying, when can you do ours? So it's very popular at this point.
And Council, FYI, I did put the new PowerPoint in your Dropbox. So as he's going along, you can also look along
that way. So I realize, except for myself and a couple others, that we hang out at cemeteries on a regular basis. I thought it'd be good to kind of show you a little before and after and the types of markers that are out there for veterans as well as civilian markers. We did get to the point to where we were restoring civilian monuments as well. It's kind of a little bit of helping the city out and helping the trustees out. To set a monument, for example, was anywhere from $250 to $1,000 to reset those monuments. So depending on the size of it, it can be kind of expensive. So just to share you, and I think I explained this to Mayor Daniels, is that I worked in procurement all my life on a global basis, and one of the things that always challenged my boss was the actual savings and then cost of doing. So we always go back and forth because that was my bonus. And so one of the cost avoidances that I feel that I've done for the city is around $23,000 in monuments that we reset out of Green Hill Cemetery. So not a little bit of change, but you could have always chose not to do anything. But we chose to make our cemeteries look honorably and presentable. So that just kind of gives you an idea of, you know, some money. I didn't spend a whole lot, I don't think. $20 worth of gravel, and, you know, Rosie helped me out on a Sunday to find a Civil War guy that I was panicking because I couldn't find, and she answered me on a Sunday. So I don't know if you got overtime for that, but I appreciated it. So anyway, so we have, when we do these cemeteries, it's gotten to be the point where we have a lot of, we have some fun. You read these epitaphs and you think, wow, that was pretty bold to put that on an epitaph. You know, it's like you're blaming God for everything. It's like, wow, you're not in a position to negotiate anything at this point. But and just in general, you know, finding things. So we've made some fun out of it. Plus, I am always surprised how many people visit the cemetery. You know, I'm out there in the mornings and I stay till afternoon, but you get kind of a routine. You see the same people visiting the monuments, and you strike up a conversation with them to find out things. So the first, this is an example of a bronze, veteran bronze plate, which, by the way, remember, all veterans' markers are owned by the VA. They are not owned by the owners, they're owned by the VA. Just to make that clear. So even though they're on the back of another monument, they're still owned by the VA. But you can see that this is one of our famous families in town, and this was Sergeant Major Yontz, Fred Yontz. And I talked to Fred a lot, which is kind of unusual, but I was the first sergeant. He's Sergeant Major, so I'm supposed to lead that up. But you can see that per the VA standards, we edge around those markers. This is the way it's supposed to look on all of them. Supposed to be edged. So yeah, take your spade and just kind of go around it and then find a low spot to put the material. But so you can see what it was before and what it was afterwards. This is a similar type of marker. VA has up to, I think it's 8 different markers that you can get from the VA that you can put on your loved ones. And this is just another example. This is in the Catholic section. There's actually 3 or 4 of those guys that pretty much all together there. But you can see the stone was pretty black. And then you can look next to it how bright after we've cleaned it. And again, it's edged with a base. So you can kind of get an idea of that marker. Typically, those are not fastened onto that stone either. Those are kind of loose and they typically move a little bit. So you have to kind of recenter it. This is an example of a bronze plate that's on the back of a civilian marker. Mr. Fleming was at South Park. His bronze marker was laying on the ground, and actually there was 2 of the pins in there that were actually sheared off. It's usually done by the weather. The water gets in behind it and pops it off. And so we, as you can see on the other side, where we've reaffixed it and epoxied it, and it's on there, should last for another several years. And again, we cleaned up this old monument as well. But this is another example of how it's done. Again, the bronze marker is still owned by the VA. This is out Nolte Cemetery, Mr. Schrader. And again, they had tried to repair this before. There's a little bit of epoxy or something on the marker. I tried to clean it off, and I determined it was some sort of epoxy. And but nevertheless, it was somebody had tried to repair it, and obviously it didn't work. So it's now on there and should be good for a long time. This is one of my favorites out of Green Hill. There's 2 of these markers. These were prior to World War I. So I'm guessing that these guys probably died of a disease. A lot of disease prior to World War, actually in all of our wars, but prior to World War I, disease was pretty rampant, just like Civil War and Spanish-American. But these guys, there's 2 of these guys, and they died pretty much before that. But you can see the markers all the way up to his name. And being that I kind of noticed the stones, I can pick them out for quite a ways. But you can see the Catholic cemetery on the backside, but it's now standing, and I think it's even a little more brighter. But this is another stone that's available. Now, Kelly's going to tell me who this guy's at. Who is this guy, Kelly? He dug more graves than you ever did. He is the record holder of the amount of cemetery graves dug in Whitley County at 800 and something. Civil War veteran, but that's his claim to fame. He dug the graves around here, all by hand. So I felt it necessary to make sure his stone was standing tall and back to looking good. So Mr. North is that person. And so, again, this is Spanish American. This guy is actually right by the road. As you go into Green Hill and take a left, you'll see this bright white stone, and it's right along the road. You know, it's the writing down at the bottom before it was leaning and so forth, and now it's all cleaned up. By the way, his wife is right next to him, and it is pretty much underground. And so there's a little bit of a story here that as a veteran, as a person in the Army, when the other guy's soldier was away, we just never messed around with spouses. And so I would not clean her for a long, long time because I didn't want to mess with the guy's spouse. But after a while, I finally decided she needed to be cleaned and fixed up. So she's right next to him. But she was actually underground. Mr. Washburn, and this is one that I kind of use as a little bit of a joke about using Mr. Effort and a little bit of wash, you know, you get from black to white. But you know, the Rotary thought that was funny, but nobody else has really kind of gathered that. But again, you can see Mr. Washburn's is nice and clean. He is what I call a KIA. He's killed in action. But he is actually there. We have a lot of killed in actions that are not there. Their monuments are there for comfort. You know, there's guys in Italy, France, a lot of guys in the ocean around the world that they have a monument, but they're not there. So this is another example of a different stone. This was probably a civilian stone, and the family had it engraved. And this is kind of common years ago that people would engrave right on the stone their units and so forth that they were belonging to. This gentleman was, I think he was just 18 when he died, but this stone is right in the corner of Green Hill as you're going around where your little dump is. See, right there is the first stone. So if you ever want to visit that one, you can see where he's at. This is another one of my favorites. This is Mr. Yontz. Sergeant Major Yontz had a bench, but all it was a pile of stone, and I thought it was a monument, and my team here was working on something else, and we come over and just start trying to figure out what it was, and we discovered it was a bench. So the bench is actually all put back together. It's actually a lot wider than it is in that picture, but I sat on it, you know, and it can hold my weight. So, but that's in the mess hall section of the cemetery. So another variety of monuments that you see. Come on, puppy. Oh, there we go. It was doing good. So since I know what the next slide is, so this is the next one will be. This was what was fun. So you can just see the stone laying here on the ground. That's the end of that crib, the infant crib on the far side. That's all we've seen. The rest of those other two, they were underground. So in the middle piece, you can't really tell. It's actually broken in like four places, I believe. I thought it was unique because it had that hole. Like you go to some place and you stick your head and family takes a picture of you. Mm-hmm. I've been wanting to do that, but nobody won't take my picture because they think it's morbid that I want to do that. But it's a very old soapstone, which is very brittle. But not only did we repair the rest of that crib, we found the soapstone, and then that pedestal, the top of it was also gone. So you can see the gravel where we reset the stones, and so you ended up with three. And in that particular area, there was actually, I think we created like two more rows of cemetery markers that weren't there. They were below ground, just in that area there of Green Hill. So I think every time they go and mow, they find out there's more markers now to mow around because I keep adding to them. So I can say, like at Eberhardt Cemetery, if you guys are familiar with that at Kaiser Road, there's over 100 of them now standing that didn't used to be standing. So there's quite a few that the mowers will have some challenges turning around now. This was one of mine. It was just a pet peeve. It's right at the entrance of Green Hill. As soon as you pull into Maine, this stone was leaning up against the tree forever. And it was one of those I just couldn't wait to fix it because it just bugged me that it was just leaning up against the tree. And now it's all white and looks really good. But this is called a tablet. So the tall, thin ones are called tablets. This is an example of a tablet stone. And it's epoxy. And I believe their last name was Ramp. Maybe it's a Ramp family. These are some other fun ones. Chuck and Bill are... Bill's the engineer on making sure we don't have the tripod fall on us, which we have. This is the one that fell on Chuck, and I'm down at the other end setting a monument, and Chuck's yelling for me because he's trying to hold the tripod up because that tall monument, we just didn't do it right. But you can see on the left-hand side where those stones are all kind of just laying on the ground. They've been there for a while, and there's actually a tree growing there in the middle of them. And then you can see on the right where now we've got them set back up, relatively straight and cleaned. And again, we had to fix the bottoms of them as well. In the background of this one, you see that tree? That's a tree that is targeted by Tori to remove. And because if you look barely on the far side, you'll see a tablet. It's actually leaning like this. And then on the mausoleum on the other side, there's another tablet that's been repaired that's just leaning out. So I can't fix them anymore until the tree's gone because it's pushing the trees over. And that's what we find that happens at all cemeteries. The families have planted a tree. The tree was little. Family dies off. Nobody to prune it, take care of it, and they start breaking up the stones. And in a lot of cases, if it's a bush, we actually find stones under that. I found a number of veterans that were actually engrossed with that. So this is true with a lot of, and I think some of it, hi, Matt, that in some cases it's on who has responsibility to maintain that. And I think that's a question families or people assume that it's the responsibility of the owner of the cemetery, which is whether it's the trustee or the city or whatever, and so it just keeps growing up and growing up. And working with the groups, we've decided that a lot of these just need to go away, that the families are gone. We're not going to let our graves look like that. So we've been removing a lot of the brush and stuff. We just kill the brush, and so we don't have to keep that.
To be clear, it's not the stones go away, but the bushes and the trees go away.
Yes, the bushes and yeah. Shrubs go away.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to avoid that because it's taken away from our work. But in some cases, we have to do it because it's... We can't repair the stone because of the tree. There's another one. There's only two in Green Hill that I cannot fix. The other one's a monument, similar to that, except it's much taller. It's right in the first entrance, and again, there's a tree that's probably knocked the monument over to begin with. The limbs did, and that's going to require some help from Corey and his group to actually get those stones back up so they can be epoxied, but the tree needs to be severely pruned and stuff, and Corey knows all that. So the city's got it. I'm all good with it. There's just two that I cannot do that with at this time. This is one of my favorite ones. In fact, I had a conversation before coming here with a lady who has family here. Her last name was Cook. And she had stopped by the store, and Joanne said, I was at Brewa. Next thing I know, she's sitting down, and she was just so excited that this cemetery, thanks to Matt as well, that these trees were disposed of. These trees were in this cemetery for years. And so we removed the trees, and you can see on the side now, if you're going down 30 and you look at the Columbia City sign, you'll see that flag. And you'll look over and you'll see all these white stones standing. And when I say all, there's 41, 42 interned there, but there's only 20-some markers that we can find. Yeah, they're probably there somewhere, but they're located. So this is one of our pride moments of a total restoration, and I know that the trustee is getting a sign put up to, it is a historical cemetery. It's inactive, but so it'll have a sign up. It talks about, the DNR standards to those signs and so forth. So that'll also be coming soon. But it's very visible now going down 30. Yeah, it's right behind the Columbia City sign, and then you see that cemetery. but it's much more visible now. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but I'm very proud of it.
So our youth council has cleaned that, has cleaned up and around that sign multiple times, and we can definitely tell the difference between the before and after, because the cemetery was pretty much forgotten until, you know, between your efforts and trustee and stuff, it's been a great thing.
So we've been busy this summer. I am big on metrics, by the way. I think I shared with the mayor on our little tour around Greenville, but I have sheets for each cemetery. So I count every veteran. I take photos of every monument marker in that cemetery. So I know who's buried where and what their marker looks like. And I do that for several reasons, but the DNR requires that I have a photo history, that if they want to know what I did, I can pull those photos up. So this is the before, this is the after. But also just in courteous for families, if the families not have, for example, a bronze marker was off at Green Hill, and they had duct taped it on. And I pulled the duct tape off, and of course the bronze marker fell off, and I reaffixed it and took a photo of it, put it on Facebook, and with hours, that family called me and was just, you know, thanking me for fixing it. And that just makes you feel good. I always tell people when I leave a cemetery, I have so much joy in my heart that I feel invincible. Probably not, but I feel that way. So that's kind of the high-level cemetery, what we did at Green Hill and some of the others. The list is growing, so I need more help with people helping me, and finances help too, but that's just dealing with my wife most of the time. But so the next task is Wreaths Across America. And being that I'm the person that puts the flags out with a team, and which got me started in this, the next thing was, what else can we do? And so I started, and I had been to Marion at the National Cemetery to put wreaths out on the veterans' markers down there, so I was somewhat familiar with it. But then I just went online and filled out the paperwork, and next thing I know, they're calling the mayor to get permission, and I'm doing it. That's too easy. So since then, you get a manual on how to do it, and the worst thing you can ever do to me is give me a manual, because I hold you accountable to the manual. I ask my fellow veteran buddies about that, and they'll tell you that I'll quote everything in a manual. So we do have a Facebook page. It is a link out there for the purchase of wreaths. And there's different, you can buy one for specific veterans, or you can get a sponsorship and say, for example, we'd like to get 400 wreaths is our target goal at Green Hill. That gives me a few extra, because there are veterans in the Green Hill that I don't know they're veterans. It happens. And every cemetery is like that. Families just don't have a way to mark it, so I get a call, just put the flag out, and I got some extra ones. So 400 is our target. So at $17 a piece, that's roughly $6,800-some dollars that we want to do for Green Hill. That gives us some extra, so then if people want one for Knoll Cemetery, you know, we can make that arrangement. Out of that $17, I'm using it as a fundraiser. Wreaths of America allows us to put $5 of that amount in our cemetery cleaning and restoration account at the Community Foundation. Wow, that's a win-win, because that helps subsidize our work that we're doing in cemeteries as well. So for every wreath, just so you know, $5 goes to the Community Foundation under the cemetery to help us continue the restoration and continue with our work. It's quite a good deal for us. And so 400, that's roughly 2,000. That's a year's worth of money for us. We can do a lot of cemetery cleaning and restoration.
You said you're hoping to buy 400?
400.
400 wreaths. So you're looking at about $6,800 to raise.
Yes. So find 400 people in the town of Columbia City and tell them to buy a wreath. Don't give them a choice. But there's links out there for that. And you can do it as just an open, I just want to buy a wreath for a veteran. That's fine. And or if you have a loved one that you want to buy a wreath for specifically, you can do that. You also can buy that wreath not specifically for Green Hill. Green Hill is just my default site. Okay, so I can still put a lease out on Noel Everhart. The day they called from Huntington, I'll take your money. There's no limitations on that. So you can have, so if your loved one is not at Green Hill, don't panic. You can still have it. There's a place to put that information on the website that you can put in the notes. This is for so-and-so. You fill out his name, and then you can put that in there. So there's no limitations on that. But I wanted to share with you that it was kind of a fundraiser for us because that was something that, that's a win-win. I still help the veterans and getting a few dollars and getting those reefs out on the cemetery. So the program is on December 16th is at a Green Hill Cemetery. We will gather at noon all across America at all 3,700 cemeteries, and we will have a little ceremony. And then at 1 o'clock, we will begin placing the wreaths on the veterans' gravesites. So if any of you are interested in helping with that, or your teams, or you know people, by all means, let me know. And we're still kind of building that whole process.
Gary, you may have mentioned this, and I missed it. Is there a deadline in which individuals can, like, when you can't purchase again?
Yes, the deadline is... Thanksgiving. That's kind of the deadline. There's a few hours in there, but it's like midnight on Thanksgiving or something, but everybody's thinking about sleeping at that point. But it's but there is a little bit of a deadline. They do say that they could make accommodations if somebody wanted one after that date, that they would do that. So what happens, and I'm going to have to come back to you because I'm going to need a parking spot to put a semi-truck with all these wreaths on it. And I want that semi to be visible because it will be decked out with wreaths across America. I've already contacted some of the news, 1521, to let them know because we're the only ones in this area that are kind of doing that. So I want visibility for Columbia City. We take our veterans seriously, and that so we'll be looking to get visibility of that big semi. There's nine wreaths to a case, weighs about 40 pounds. And we'll get them out. So we're in that process. We're out on Facebook. I've tried to send it to everybody. They're probably getting annoyed with me, but I'm excited about just getting, and we have. We've had people already start to purchase, and in some cases they wanted one for their loved one in Huntington at a cemetery. So the system does work. I think that's it. Nope, it's not it. I'm sorry. So one of the things that my brother-in-law, Bill Helm, you didn't put that connection together. I was at Jefferson Township with a crew, and we were putting our Memorial Day flags out at cemetery, and I said, Bill, can you run over to Washington Township, which is Janice's cemetery that she takes care of for us, and put the flags out on those, I think there's 4 or 5 veterans there. Yeah, I can do that. So he takes off, and I said, we'll meet you at Compton, which is Oak Grove. So the crew's all there, and Bill comes up to me, and he's just kind of distraught a little bit. And I said, what's up? And I go, well, it's just an odd thing. So I said, I wanted to put this flag on this PFC Wright. And I'm thinking about that, and I said, I've seen his picture somewhere. And then his mom's right next to him, but there's just one of those little silver temporary markers. And I think she's a Gold Star mother. There's nothing that says that. Bill, in his way, researched this, went to Huntington and Fort Wayne libraries and everywhere to get information about PFC Wright. PFC Wright was 16 years old when he joined the Army. His mother had to sign off on that during Vietnam. He turned 17. 3 weeks later, he was killed in action. So his mother, for the next 20-some years, lived with that. And Bill has talked with the commander of this young man, his unit. He's done unbelievable work on this whole project. So one of the things that we did is that we raised money, and we felt like it was still in our scope of work of restoration and cemetery. So Bill done a lot of talking and was able to raise money to, as you can see, put the footer in. The soldier did not have a footer. That stone's just laying on the ground, so it's sinking. So now there's a footer, and I believe we've ordered also the monument for the Gold Star Mother. Her monument will look very similar to his, except it will say it's a Gold Star Mother on it. So we're very proud of that. The AMVETS in South Whitley, the VFW, individuals all chipped in to make that happen. And that is a very, very proud moment that we talk about things that we do for our veterans, but there's also those that leave behind. And this was a Gold Star Mother. And that's big. That's huge. They're building a giant monument over at O'Day Road for Gold Star parents. I met a couple at a car show over there, and it's amazing that Gold Star parents losing a son or a daughter in war, and then living with that, especially at this age. This also made national news in that, Bill, you might have to jump in here, but it made national news in that
CBS.
Yeah, CBS News ran a program about not only him, but I think there was a couple others at the same time or similar to that. McNamara changed the rules.
Terry McNamara and President Johnson took a lot of heat because the crew from CBS was on Terry's flight, one of the helicopters when it went out. They actually have footage of him after he was hit. Dick brought him back at 17 years old. He'd only been in Vietnam 3 weeks, and he was killed. And so I did have the privilege to talk to his commander. This is just a short version. There's a lot to this story. But so we do have the stone is on order and should be in any time now, and we will place that and the Gold Star Mother Medallion.
Okay. This is my dog, Teddy. The stone he's laying at says United States Cowboy, which is what I was. And when I come around the truck, I didn't pay much attention to it, but he's laying there staring at that stone. I'm like, geez, Teddy, what are you trying to tell me? So I always remind, even a service dog doesn't forget, fellow veterans. But I really appreciate the city's support and the township support. Cleveland Township is now on board with doing this. It's South Whitley and Washington Township, so it's growing quickly. We've tried to stay south of 30, but hopefully we'll be north of 30, maybe at the end of 2024, depending on how things go, because we still have to do all the other work. And by the way, I want to thank the city and Rosie, not only for her Sherlock Holmes work with finding that Civil War veteran that I was not even close to where he belonged, but we got him installed, but the city has purchased the cleaning material, a 55-gallon drum of cleaning material, which is expensive. That's one of our biggest expenses. For that cleaning. So we hope to be able to clean all the stones in Greenville next year before Memorial Day. So that's be a little easier because we've gotten a lot of the hard work done, but I really appreciate the city stepping up for that. And if I understand that Matt's matching that because he wouldn't want the city to get too much on, so Matt's working on doing the same, and that's really good because that really helps the cost of things. The epoxy and the stuff, it's all specialized. And that's our cost, is getting those materials. So I really appreciate that. It's really helpful.
So I want to thank you for taking me out a couple of weeks ago and showing me kind of the process. I was really impressed, first of all, of how great the cleaner works, especially because it's all natural and all the other things you said that isn't, it's non-toxic, so on and so forth. That was pretty impressive. But, I guess it's one of those things where I don't think most people realize that when someone purchases a stone, not one of the Department of Defense or the
veterans,
not one of those specifically, but specifically the stones themselves. And people, it's kind of left to the people left behind of the person representing those stones to take care of those stones. And when those families age out after multiple generations and there's no one left to take care of those stones, I'm thankful that you guys have stepped in to fill that role. It's really cool. I think our youth council is going to spend a little time with you here maybe Monday. I don't know if you know that yet, but still, we're excited about that. But I'll tell you, I know I speak on behalf of everybody up here, just how thankful we are for the work that you all are doing day in and day out on our cemeteries, not just in Columbia City, but across Whitley County. I think our citizens owe you guys a debt of gratitude for what you're doing to not only make our cemetery look good, but to honor those individuals that are remembered in that cemetery.
I think it's important too to say, like, it's a very physical job that you're out there doing,
yeah,
pulling these things up, but they're doing it with so much love and care and concern for the people who are there. And you know, you're right, a lot of those families aren't around anymore to give that kind of care, so it's nice that there are people who will.
We do a fair amount of research. When recently out at Everhart, we found the guy that went down with the ship, and Bill jumped into who was this guy that went down with the ship in the Pacific or something. And so we, you know, Bill again jumped in there and researched what ship it was on and where was that. So one of my favorites, and I'll let you go, is that out at South Park, you may have watched a movie called The Devil Brigade. War movie, you know, called the Devil's Brigade. But it was a unit that was formed of Canadian and Americans during World War II. It was the first special forces group, the very first special group. We're up to 20-some special forces groups now, but first one. So if you watch the movie, they're training together and they're doing all this elite stuff, and they're off to Italy. This guy died in Italy. He was in the first Special Forces group. And when I was cleaning that, I just started reading it. I'm like, oh my gosh, this guy's like famous. He's part of the first elite Special Forces group ever created. And he died in action in Italy. And I just thought, I'm looking at his stuff, I'm going, okay, this guy, and he's cleaned. And it's because I spent the rest of the day just working on trying to make it presentable, but that's the type of folks we have in our cemetery. We have poets. We have Civil War poets who wrote books. South Park. We have very decorated soldiers in all of our cemeteries. You know, Purple Heart, Broad Star, or you name it. So there's a lot of history out there. Besides the guy who dug all the graves. He's as far as I always think of you. You know, take the time to take a visit and walk around your cemeteries and look. I see the last names, I'm thinking, oh, I know that last name. Why does her stone look like that? You know, but it must have been cousin on mother's side or something. Take the time, take a walk. It's very rewarding. Thank you.
Thank you guys for being here.
Adoption. Do I have a motion to read ordinance 2023-17 by title only?
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Jennifer, seconded by Dan. Further discussion? All those in favor show the usual sign. It is unanimous. Please read ordinance number 2023-17 by title only.
Ordinance 2023-17, which is the adoption of the 2024 property tax budgets for the city.
So as I mentioned last time, not a dramatic bunch of changes to the budget as presented. I think there's only two new positions that we are proposing to add. One is a community engagement specialist, and one is a new administrative assistant at the Parks Department. Again, funds the majority of our projects that are planned, from trails to Eagle Park to community crossings, Westgate, all those kind of things. We haven't heard back, by the way, on community crossings yet. We're still waiting on the grant award for that. We feel optimistic, but it's always cautiously optimistic when you're in a grant cycle. So, again, really no major changes. 4% increase for our employees across the board. And anything else I covered that's big? I covered a lot of this last time, but Jenny, since you weren't here, you've seen the budget, so I know about it too. So, any questions, comments, concerns regarding Ordinance 2023-17? Okay, can I have a motion to approve Ordinance 2023-17 on second and final reading?
So moved. Second.
Motion by Dan, seconded by Tad. Further discussion? All those in favor should be the usual sign. It is unanimous. Thank you.
And also with the budget?
Yes.
With the petition?
Yeah, so as you will remember, we have the excess levy appeal that we've done the last couple of years because of our growth being outpacing, if you will, the growth of others, the annual, I guess, across the state and stuff. So there is the petition, if you will, for the excess levy appeal. So can I have a motion to approve the petition for the excess levy appeal as presented?
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Tad, seconded by Jenny. Further discussion? All those in favor show by the usual sign. It is unanimous. Thank you. Is there anything else you have? Okay. Next up is Ordinance 2023-18. Do I have a motion to read by title only? I'm sorry. Yes, read by title only.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Jennifer, seconded by Walt. Further discussion? All those in favor show by the usual sign. It is unanimous. Please read Ordinance number 2023-18 by title only.
Ordinance 2023-18, an ordinance amending the zoning classification of certain property from the R2 two-family residential district to the R3 multifamily residential district.
You'll remember that this was presented at the last meeting by Nathan Bilger and by Brooks Langlow regarding the second phase, effectively, of Timber's Edge. Any questions, comments, concerns since that time? Are you here representing that? No? Okay. I didn't. Just asking.
No, they were going to make that adjustment.
Yeah, it was the...
Was it the drawing
letter?
Yes. Yes.
Or the...
So that was included in your last motion, if you will, when you approved it the first time. So, yeah. So that would be also included in the second one. Okay. Hearing nothing. Can I have a motion to approve Ordinance 2023-18 with that change?
Second.
Motion by Dan, seconded by Tad. Further discussion? All those in favor show with the usual sign. It is unanimous. Next up is the job description. This will look familiar because this came in front of you last time. There was a slash. It was administrative assistant / assistant program coordinator. I know Matt worked on it with Beth. I know, Rosie, you were a part of that as well. So that did get changed, as we discussed. And you can see in red there some of the changes to that actual job position description. Any questions, comments, concerns about that?
This looks better.
Yeah. A little more clean, isn't it?
Okay. So that goes into effect in January 1, or?
That will come into effect after you approve it, then when Matt decides to make that change.
Okay.
Yep. Any other questions? Hearing none, can I have a motion to approve the position description for the assistant program coordinator?
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Jennifer, seconded by Tad. Further discussion? All those in favor show by the usual sign. It is unanimous. Department head reports. Chip.
Within the next couple weeks, we're going to start putting in pipe at Eagle Park to get the drainage system set up, and then hopefully go to bid the end of November, 1st December. Trail is looking to go to bid at 1st of December also, so anticipate voting those two.
Questions of Chip? Thank you. Sean?
So as you all know, we're doing a 69 kV conversion on our AEP lines that began 2 weeks ago, where we had to de-energize feeder number one coming out of the Whitley station from AEP. That's been de-energized. We're running off feeder number two right now. They're going to rebuild that to 69 kV. So hopefully end of this month, we'll start converting our substations over to 69 kV, which explained in the past, currently we run a 34.5 kV system. We're going to go to a 69 system per upgrades from AEP that we really weren't given an option to do or not. So the end of the month, we'll have to start switching over to that new voltage. Customers won't see a change once the changeover is done, but they will see a brief outage when we make the change, about 5 to 10 seconds. We're going to have to blink everybody's power because we have to turn it off and turn the new on. So I will be organizing with your commercial customers, your industrial customers, your hospital, things like that, when the most convenient, if there is such a thing, time to take a real brief outage to switch that over. So we'll be working on that hopefully at the end of the month. We're still working up on Horses Road, where we had a bunch of overhead primary that ran through the front of these properties that was constantly getting squirrels and trees and things like that. And the line was actually failing the pull for that. So we're burying all that. We're about 3/4 of the way through with that project already. The guys are doing a great job. We're doing all of it completely in-house, which is awesome. They're doing a great job. So hopefully we'll have that done. We did have a meeting today with the property owner that bought the old Crooked Lake golf course. They bought that off into 6 lots, or 5 lots technically. The original owner is keeping 2 of them. All the rest of the lots are already sold. So now we've got to try to get power to the middle of the golf course. So that's been a little bit of a challenge, but we'll get that done very shortly. Working with a company that's going to come in and give us a quote to do line clearing and vegetation control for all of our lines on the urban circuits. We've been so busy with other projects, we don't have the crew or the time to do our own line clearing. And I feel like if we can get that done as a crew, they can do it in a month time. We'll have it all done. We won't have to do it for several years. And after that, other things. As I said in the calendar, the board meeting, I'm receiving phone calls, emails continuously on new fitness center wants to come in, new credit union, a new
dentist
shelter, new dentist office. I mean, this guy on the Beltline Community Center. I mean, we just keep building new buildings, and it's a great sign for our city. It really is. It just keeps us super busy. Especially with the shortage of material right now in our industry, and most industries, but ours has kind of gotten hit a little worse because of Department of Energy standards and things like that. So, yeah, we're just staying super busy, but it's a good problem to have. So we're doing, obviously, you guys are doing a great job. The mayor's doing a great job to keep industry wanting to locate here. So other than that, unless you have any questions.
Question of Sean. Thank you. Gary.
All right, First Friday is wrapped up for the year of 2023, and I think went very well. I have very little issues up there, so I'm happy to report that. Dispatch and police attended a couple of events as far as putting on tables and stuff and handing out goodies. So, and again, I think that was a good presence of them, and that worked out well for us. Gina just got back from a training / instructing on records / advanced records, so in Chicago, and that went very well. I may be a little biased, but I think we have one of the best records keepers around, so glad she was able to do that. We replaced / retired our shotguns that we've had for 30-plus years. I know we've never replaced them since I've been here. I've been here a little over 20. I asked Brian this morning, and I said, hey, you know when the last time we got these shotguns? And he's like, they were here before I was here, and he's been here 30-plus. So we replaced those Benelli shotguns and had a lot of guys that are new to us, Benelli shotguns, and a lot of positive feedback on that. So getting the guys the right tools is a big plus and motivator for them. gear up for Halloween on the 28th of this month, and Veterans Marathon on the 11th of next month. So that's keeping us busy, and dispatch is going pretty smooth and quiet.
Questions of Gary? The shotguns were locally purchased, correct?
Yes, they were.
Thank you. Kelly?
We are gearing up for leaf season. Start to see piles out already raked. That's going to start the October 23rd. On that Monday, we'll start getting some machines out and start going around and picking up leaves. Been working on our asset management plan. We have to get certified through Purdue, a letter of certification before we can proceed with getting Community Crossings grant money. So we're working on trying to get that before the end of December. Attended the Indiana Street Commissioners Conference last week with a couple of the newer employees. And we had two spotlights, flashing red lights installed on two stop signs at Jefferson and Deer Path at the request of some citizens in that area concerned about children. Paved Grove Park. Limb pickups done for the year, and we're starting to work on getting our plows and salt boxes ready for the next season coming up.
For January, right?
Yeah, right.
Questions of Kelly? Thank you. Matt?
The guys ended up lowering the basketball goal at Patriotic. It was 6 inches above regulation, so they brought that down. Working with Spears, our the person that helped us build the pool and supplies us our chemicals and that, worked with them to get a CPO class or a certified pool operator class here. They'll either have it in our new conference room at the new office, or they will have it at our pavilion. But we have to have a minimum of 12 students, if you will, from the area before they'll hold the class. That'll be sometime in December. Since it will be close, I wanted to send Evan Searball to that. That way there'll be three people able to work inside the pump house and make chemical changes and things on the pool. So if one of us is not close, then we have just another opportunity for that person to come in, and especially if we have a fecal event. So... Andrea and Melinda are working hard, putting together mother-son carnival. They went today and bought some other stuff as far as candy and some of the carnival food. And then this morning, the art class, the 2D art class from the high school came out and started their painting project on the concrete walls that we put in place. They're going to, I know they said one was going to be an eyeball, one was going to be a cheeseburger, and you know they've got all these ideas, so they started painting those this morning, and they'll continue and hopefully get that done before the weather gets too cold.
Great, thank you. Questions of Matt? Thank you. Mike?
Well, we've been painting hydrants out of Deer Chase. Eagle Glen is done, now Deer Chase is done. I think the next place we're going is Emancipation Court and along Lincoln Way there, and also on Ryan Road and that. We got the drainage tile for Eagle Park. It was delivered this morning. And also we got the pipe for the first phase of the Chauncey Street. It would go from Spencer to Ellsworth Street because we've had a complaint of sewer gas coming up through the sewers are the storm drains there. I can say that I've never smelled it, but the guys when we're down there doing it, they can, and they complain about it quite a bit, so I'm sure that it does have quite an odor, so we should be taking care of that, and by doing this, we will be taking them drains and in the future all the way up to the post office will be taken off the combined sewer and put into a going into a storm drain to go straight to the river.
Yep. Okay. Questions of Mike? Thank you. Mike?
That project is 100% my support.
Definitely. I can imagine.
We have two of our secondaries that during a recent rain event was put in reverse instead of forward when they turned it on. So therefore causing a crash and breaking some parts, angle iron and things like that. So we contacted the company that originally put them in 88 or 89, and they still have our file for that equipment. So we will be able to purchase parts that we do need to put that back together. They're currently putting together a quote, so we'll see how much that's going to be. You remember I talked before at our retreat, some councils, the SCADA project that may have spread out over a couple of years because of the price of it. We hope to have the this year's phase new panels in and up and functional by the end of November. And our sludge recirculation pumps, we have to rebuild those every 5 to 7 years. We ordered our parts in January, received those last week, so those pumps will be rebuilt in-house here in the next couple of weeks. So learn just day-to-day, that's all we got.
Question to Mike. Thank you. Alina, introduce yourself. Talk about the Youth Council.
I'm Alina Hauser. I'm a senior at Eagleton Academy, and I'm the secretary of the Youth Council. So our last meeting was September 27th, and we met here, and we discussed some city updates, like some things that were happening downtown. The Kitchen Co. opened in the Van Buren Flats, and then we talked about how Junction Cafe is going to be opening there, too. And then after that, we did our monthly service project, and in September, it was cleaning the bike trails at Marshes Park. So we did that, and then after that, we had lunch at the square, and then met back here to go over some township government stuff.
Question to Alina. Thank you. Rosie?
We did get our closeout and our street project, so maybe now we'll
So our street closing, our community crossings project from 2022 was closed out because, remember, we get granted in 22, but did the paving in 23, so once we get that done. So we're always working kind of a year in arrears. It's kind of weird, but anyway, so, yeah. We don't have anything on the agenda for council at the next meeting, so if you're okay, especially because I think a couple of you are gone, I know I'm gone, so I think we'll just cancel city council for the second meeting in October, if that's okay.
Yeah, I'm just curious to vote election day.
Election day is not a council day because it falls on the 7th, which would be the first Tuesday of the month. So, yeah, 14th will be our next council meeting. A couple of things for your information. As you can see, Tom is gone. So he did get the kind of resignation / retirement, if you will, letter from one of our firefighters. So the Board of Works approved the replacement to move forward with hiring a replacement. Truck 102 is going to Ohio. Chris and Tom are going to take it to Ohio on the 16th. Tom made a mention that he has to leave at 4 a.m. to get it over there by 8 a.m. So I guess he's wanting you to feel sorry for him.
Time too.
Yeah. but they are leaving 102 there until repairs are completed. He is on vacation this week, and he did say that this month is jam-packed with fire prevention because of Fire Prevention Week. A couple things for your information. Rosie and Beth and I are working with our health insurance stuff to get the quotes in, and so we're working on that right now. We had kind of an initial meeting yesterday. We don't have all the quotes in yet. It's looking favorable, but we'll see. So I don't want to promise anything. I know, probably shouldn't have said that, but probably just jinxed us. But in any case, today I got to go down to Plainfield and be a part of the Community Crossings a workshop for people around the state as a part of the first task force as appointed by the governor I kind of got to give a little perspective on where we're at with the first task force. For instance, 2025 is when gas consumption, fuel consumption is supposed to peak, which is a problem because our road infrastructure funding is really based on gas taxes. So if gas consumption, fuel consumption goes down because of CAFE standards, electric vehicles, things like that, how are we going to fund the statewide? How are we going to fund our roads long term? And so that's one of the conversation pieces of the first task force. But, lots of interesting conversations that will continue on that front. Last Friday, we had some students from Little Turtle Elementary in here, the third graders in here, to spend some time learning about local government. Went to police fire here in the council chambers with me, as well as over at the courthouse. That was the second of three Fridays. So next Friday, we get Quessy and Mary Raver.
This Friday.
I'm sorry, that's what I meant. This Friday. This Friday, we get Quessy and Mary Raver, third graders. So we're looking forward to that. That'll be, so this Friday will be the third of three of those. What else do I need to tell you about? Youth Council is on Monday. And got a lot of meetings coming up this coming week. I think good things are happening, and I'm sure there's something else I should be telling you, but I think that's all I got. Paul?
Septic system nomination is kicked off and started installation. In fact, it had been going on for quite a while. We actually have some places where we're connected. And so we're down in the area right now heading towards State Lakers. So that we've come a long ways in the last 90 days compared to the first 2 years. And still got some challenges, but we're working through them.
And you're talking about the regional sewer district?
Yes.
Right? Dan?
I have nothing.
Okay. Jennifer?
Arts Commission met last week, and we will be partnering with Columbia City Connect on a winter project that is a sort of different angle on art. It's more about like a public speaking storytelling event.
Okay.
I'll have more information about that later, but we were all kind of excited to. We want to be very broad in different kinds of artists that we're doing. So.
Do you have a time frame? I mean, are we looking at December, January, February?
So.
Or don't know yet. If you don't know, that's fine.
It'll like the process for it will start in January because there's going to be some workshopping.
Okay.
For like the general community will be able to participate in this, and then if they want to be part of the event that's later, then that'll probably be more like February, March.
Okay.
So that's in the works, and then we're also working on some strategic planning for next year, and made some decisions about some grants that we want to apply to, one of which being the Indian Arts Commission.
Excellent. Thank you. Tad?
We had redevelopment today, and the LML property, which we thought we were going to be able to start marketing, we're not able to do that yet because now it's probably going to be another 16 or 90 days. They have to do more borings to check for lead, and it's like an ongoing, never-ending cycle of pulling.
I just keep reminding myself that there were many years that they just went and dumped barrels out the back of that, and so we're just paying the consequences of that.
Yes. So, fortunately, we still have funds to take care of it, and so we're looking at probably another 60 to 90 days before, you know, they can find, maybe hopefully they don't find anything else they need to do. So, that's it.
Thank you. Jenny?
Okay, nothing.
There's no press. Anybody from the audience like to speak? Name and address, please.
My name is Caspian Love. Address 113 East Market Street, and I want to talk about how we should have chickens allowed in Columbia City.
Okay.
Because, like, I mean, first of all, chickens are adorable. I mean, whoever doesn't like chickens is a monster. Mm-hmm. You know, you get eggs, which are pretty expensive, so having an easy way to get your own eggs is very helpful. And then also, if you only allow hens, then they're very quiet, so it doesn't really cause any problems.
Anything else, Cassidy?
I think that's it.
Okay. Thank you.
Melanie Love, 113 East Market Street. Caspian is our bird child. I have today, since some of you had voiced fear in the amount of work involved in logistics of city chickens, I thought it would be helpful for me to come up with some solutions. I'm just a regular person. I don't have all the great connections and experience that I'm sure many of you guys have. But I do care about the subject, so I'm doing the best with what I've got. I'm sure there are holes in my ideas and that someone with better resources could tidy up or adjust. This is just me throwing out ideas. Potential problem number one, who collects and assesses fees, oversees permits, all that kind of stuff. Option one, form a chicken committee. Of course, this means added bureaucracy, having official meetings, which means nothing will get done and it'll be slow and ineffective like a lot of government. Option two, the city police handle chicken problems. Permits are handled by city utilities like garage sale permits or by the police like golf cart permits. Option three, we get an animal control officer who would handle chickens as well as any other animal-related issues. Option four, our city gets a dedicated ordinance officer, combining all the grass length, golf carts, chickens, etc. into one location, freeing up the city police to handle laws rather than ordinances. And this, again, would aid in streamlining everything with less opportunity for things to be lost between shifts, subject to differing opinions, etc. Option six, we mix all this together. But actually, in researching all of this, I came across an existing ordinance from, I believe, 2014, which is in Chapter 90, dealing with animals, and says... It grants the Common Council the authority to appoint an animal control commission and designate the board's duties, which from the wording sounds like it might be referring to the Board of Works and Safety being designated already as the one in charge of dealing with a lot of the potential consequences. It outlines who would be on the commission, how long they would serve, how often they would meet, etc. My question is this something that already exists or was it never actually implemented?
Historically speaking, the Board of Works has acted as the animal control board.
Right, but the Animal Control Commission exist or does?
No, I'm saying that the Board of Works has done all the duties of what you described regarding animals. So mm-hmm. if there's a dangerous dog, if there's a control issue, things like that, typically that's the Board of Works has handled those specific issues.
Okay, well, my thought was a lot of the issues that have been cited about having backyard chickens are already addressed in the existing ordinances. Potential problem number two, what if chickens get loose? All of us are in agreement that chickens should be in a fenced area, not naturally running loose. As I've been told, they actually do in parts of Florida, and apparently it's awesome, but I don't think that probably would be. However, accidents may happen, and we should have plans in place just in case. Option one, chicken owners physically mark or tag all their hens with their contact information, keep records including detailed physical descriptions, subject to audit, and finding if not in compliance. This ensures any found animals would be able to be returned to their owners. Lost and found chickens could be reported easily via a city app with a button for report chicken. I don't know if you guys are familiar. There's an app that we use a lot with Band. It's really easy to just boop, send messages to everybody. This could send out a notification to the proper channel to deal with the issue. And chicken owners can either opt in as a chicken chaser and consent to help and help catch and return the loose hens, or they can pay $50 a year to not be bothered by helping others, and that just becomes, it goes straight to the government to deal with if they're a problem. I have more in here, but I don't want to bore you guys. Potential problem number three, if someone's not being a good neighbor with their chickens, I've kind of already addressed that. And four, what can be done with lost, abandoned, confiscated chickens? The 4-H poultry club leader has said that poultry club is able to be a resource for animal intake and finding new homes for flocks, as long as we're not talking about very large-sized ones. The Giving Gardens has said that they would be willing to help in the future if they had the facility to house chickens, the volunteers to help care for them, et cetera. They could not do that, you know, tomorrow, but it is something they would consider. And we can also put together a list of local farms that are willing to take on a hen or six from time to time if needed. Many farms with more than a dozen hens don't mind taking on more. And lastly, what if chickens are too loud? Again, roosters can be as loud as a barking dog, but hens are actually pretty quiet. As a reference, a list of common noises that are louder than chickens includes motorcycles, dogs, vacuum cleaners, the haunted jail, a toilet flushing, garbage disposals, doorbells, sporting events, blenders, car horns, babies crying, tea kettle whistles, lawnmowers, chainsaws, leaf blowers, fire trucks, your phone ringing, police sirens, an electric shaver, fireworks, big trucks, a coffee grinder, your TV audio, snowplows, music, and trains. In closing, implementation of backyard chickens would bring new challenges, but I believe it is also an opportunity to showcase our creativity, resourcefulness, and community. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else want to speak? Would you? Come on up.
No, I have a follow-up question, if I may.
Okay.
You kind of ran through everything here quick, and
sure.
I didn't get a chance to back up.
Okay.
And ask. This would be, I believe, for the police department. So, my question is, how many shotguns were retired, and what was the previous shotgun brands that were upgraded? That's my first question.
Previous shotguns were Remington 870s.
Remington 870s, okay.
And we're retiring 13 of those.
Okay. And as you retire those, do they just go for backup? What's the process
there?
They'll
be traded them in to the local.
Okay, great. They were for traded. Yep. Okay, perfect. Thank you very much.
Can we have your name for the record since you spoke?
Yeah, Jared Lancaster.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Okay, we'll call the meeting adjourned. Thank you.